Deputy Minister for Domestic Policy Coordination from Indonesia, and His Excellency the Ambassador, and the rest of the delegation, most welcome to the meeting of our committee and the engagements that we're going to take with you. I want to quickly run through introductions. And perhaps people will also indicate the parties to which they belong. At the end there, just the other side of Mokgalapa. Honorable Kalyan, Honorable Kalyan, can you introduce yourself, please?
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Sandy Kalyan. I have been a Member of Parliament since 1999. I am with the Official Opposition, obviously a member of this portfolio. I also have the honour of serving this Parliament at the Pan-African Parliament, which is a structure of African parliaments based along the lines of the EU model. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Honorable Stevens Mukharapa, member of the Committee for the Democratic Alliance, and member of the Sadiq Parliament as well.
Darren Bergman, also a member of the Democratic Alliance and a member of Parliament. I also serve on the Sports and Recreation Committee.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Tandiwe Kenya, member of the African National Congress, serving in this in the International Relations Portfolio Committee and also in Home Affairs. I thank you.
Good morning. My name is Deputy Neo Rapute. I'm a member of the African National Congress, which is the ruling party. I'm serving in this Portfolio Committee, International Relations and Cooperation, and Home Affairs.
I am Peggy Khadebe. Good morning, everyone. I am Peggy Khadebe, the Member of Parliament of the Republic of South Africa, serving in the Portfolio Committee of International Relations. I'm the whip of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Khadebe. My name is Sipho Sezwe, and the surname is Masango. I am the chairperson. I heard you using the chairman. No, it's not you. It's someone else there. Well, in South Africa, we say chairperson so that it is easy to elect our women compatriots to responsibilities like this. I'm in the chair of this committee. I'm a member of the ANC. I have been serving in the provincial parliament of Mpumalanga. There are 9 provinces in South Africa, as you know. I was serving in the legislature since 1999. I'm actually new here in the national parliament. I came 2014. So I have some 17 or so years experience in the lawmaking process. I want to defer to the leader of the delegation to introduce your delegation. Ambassador, I will take the honors. Okay, yeah. Over to you.
Mr. Chairperson, Portfolio Committee on International Relations and Cooperation, Honorable Mr. Sipho Sezwe Masango, and Honorable B.A. Radhib Wibbs, and Honorable Member of the Parliament on the Committee of International Relations and Cooperation. Good morning. Today, on behalf of my delegation, of course, I'm going to... my name is Suprapto Martosutomo, Ambassador of Indonesia and Pretoria, already 2.5 years here. Hopefully, I'm still have 1 year more next year. I'm going to request my colleague to introduce himself one by one. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Excellencies. I'd like to introduce myself. My name's Yudi Swastono, my full name. Yes, I'm working at the Minister, Coordinating Ministry for Political, Legal and Security Affairs as the Deputy Minister for Domestic Policy Coordination. And this meeting, I'm the delegation of our delegation from Indonesia. Thank you very much.
Very good evening, Mr. Honorable Masango and the others, member of committee. I would like to introduce myself. My name is Irwansa. I'm working with Mr. Judy as the staff of him, currently taking care of international relations and cooperation. Thank you.
Chairperson, Excellencies, members of Parliament. My name is Franz Albert Yoku. I'm a journalist by background. I have previously worked as Chief of Staff and Political Advisor to Prime Ministers in Papua New Guinea, neighboring country Papua New Guinea. But since 2007, I have returned home to Indonesia and have since been working with the government, currently as a special staff in the Coordinating Ministry for Political, Judicial and Security Affairs, advising on regional autonomy for Papua.
Thank you, Kasi. I would like to introduce myself. My name is Colonel Heru Anam. I'm an Indonesian Defense Attaché for South Africa, and my office in the same in ambassador in Pretoria. I've been here for 1 year and 2 more years in here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. My name is Sarto, working staff supporting in delegation in Indonesia. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Alifa Rahmat Sukri. You can call me Alifa. I'm working at Cabinet Secretary of Republic Indonesia. I am the head of Division Politics and Government Internal Affairs. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chairperson, Honorable Member of the Portfolio Committee. My name is John Purba, and I am the Vice Consul for in the section of Information and Sociocultural at the Indonesian Consulate General here in Cape Town. And I'm glad to finally get to meeting you, especially now that I meet with you personally, Mr. Lubabalo, that we liaise about this. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Achil Desrelani. I am working for Indonesian Consulate General in Kenilworth, Cape Town. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Indrawan Kusuma. I am working in Indonesian Consulate for Economic Staff. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. We have very big delegation. This one is a picture of Indonesia that we have 252 million right now, our population. It's very big, and then of course our purpose to come here is to introduce Indonesia for the in term of development, especially in economic, not only in the west part of Indonesia, but also the eastern part, that now we are concentrated to build our territory in that one, because there is a gap between western part of Indonesia and eastern. So based on that, we are going to explain it to you, especially right now Indonesia is the biggest economy in the region. In ASEAN, the member of ASEAN is 10, consists of 10 countries, the biggest economic in Indonesia. Right now, our GDP is about $1 trillion U.S. dollar. And then, luckily, even there is a global economic downturn, Indonesia can still maintain, in the last 5 years, our economic growth is 5.7%. And then hopefully this year, we will have about 5.2%. So based on that, our government under President Joko Widodo, we concentrate our infrastructure development in east part of Indonesia. And also we concentrate our development in marine product, because Indonesia, 70% of the total territory of Indonesia is consists of water. So even we have very big, we can say huge territory, is about 7.7 million square kilometers. And then when you fly from east to west, it's about 7 hours by plane. So it's a time for Indonesia to invite our brother and sister from South Africa to come to have a business, of course, with Indonesia. We always encourage South Africans to come to Indonesia in order to have close each other, because we already consider that South Africa is our strategic partnership. So it's time for us. And then also, I would like to thanks to you, Mr. Chairperson, that you spend your time for us. That really, we really appreciate. In order to have a discussion on you, and then of course we are going to learn from you also in this development, so we can share each other. And then besides that, of course, we in order to develop in eastern part of Indonesia, we still have a problem in domestic affairs also, that there is a separatism also in the one of the island in Indonesia that we call it Papua, where Mr. Frans living there. So based on that, they came already to South Africa in order to have I can say that one black campaigns in order to attract support coming from South Africa. They're going to also to approach parliament and something like that. But so in order to give the clear picture of the Papua development there, so my colleague from the especially head of delegation would like to explain about this one. What is the real development? The real problem is there, and also, if you have time, of course, we are going to invite you to see by yourself the development in Indonesia, especially in that province that there is a little bit of problem in our territory. So based on that, I would like, if you don't mind, maybe you can continue, and then my colleague will, the head of delegation will explain about the development in Indonesia. You can imagine the Indonesia consists of 17,500 islands, and then really very huge, and then it's quite difficult to control our territory itself, because we have to have so many 17,500 islands, the biggest archipelago countries in the world. Yes, and also if you look our language, we have about 400 languages totally different. Luckily, we have one national language, what we call it Indonesian language, that we derive from the smallest tribe in Indonesia. So we are not using the majority, but using the smallest. Thank you. Please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. This time is very glad to have a meeting here. And what Mr. Ambassador mentioned before, that our governments now concentrate to the how to
bridges the gap between the Western and Eastern. And our president's now committed to accelerate the development on Eastern province, especially at the Papua province. As we know that the one of the implementations, the government gave the special autonomy for Papua province, especially at how to accelerate for education, health, and infrastructure. This is our main development in Papua province. As we know that the transfer from the government to the regional government in Papua and West Papua, we have Papua Islands consist of two provinces. The one is West Papua province, and then the second one is Papua provinces. This is if you look to the map here, the western is part of Indonesian's sovereignty, and then the eastern is Papua New Guinea's government. If we look to the transfer from Sitra government to the Papua province, 2011 until 2015, we already transferred around about 17.60 billion to develop two provinces in Papua. On Papua province and to the West Papua province, the transfer is around about $5.15 billion, and focus on three objects: infrastructure, health, and education. This is our focus. Since 2011 until now, we have to acknowledge that the gap is already reduced slowly, but based on the Human Development Index, if we compare to our national SDI, unfortunately, those provinces still, the lowest of our region. That is why we are now concerned on those provinces. Now our governments setting the new policy and strategic, what we call it a holistic development approach. Focus on six dimensions: economic empowerment, education, health, infrastructure, law and human rights, and the last one is diplomacy. 13. Yes. This is now we are concentrated to implement of our policy, of Jokowi policy. This is six of dimension. Yes. Jokowi, the president, yes. For Papua development strategy, it needs to cooperate or based on seven of what we call it socio-anthropological approach. We have seven big tribe in two provinces. That is why all of the development policy used to look to adjust based on the seven of what we call it seven big tribes in Papua and West Papua. This is our concentration. And excellencies, in between, I would like to say something that we encourage to develop our region in Papua. what Mr. Ambassador mentioned. That is a few people in Papua still to disturb by using the what we call it the campaign to our friends here. Probably, in, of course, we ask to you to have a very clear point of view. That yes, even actually, it's not only eastern part of Indonesia, as well as at the time, the western of Papua, western of Indonesian region. So we had the same problem, and we try to what we call it the to overcome those problem by using the what we call it welfare force, and then give the special autonomy for those provinces, and for instance in Aceh provinces, and then now we consider to the Papua region. I think this what are you? I'd like to pass to the Mr. Franz Apijoku, originally from Papua. Probably they can make it more clear, because he is one of the advisors for Papua matters. Okay, Pak Franz, please.
Thank you, Chairperson, Excellencies. That's interesting. At the gate just earlier this morning, the receptionist almost got me relegated or sent to another person, because she said she was serving Indonesian delegation, and if I could be attended to by somebody else. I politely reminded her that I was very much part of the visiting Indonesian delegation, and please serve me, madam. Happily, I'm here and didn't get sent out. I would like to first tell you South Africa, your country, has been an intriguing nation. For me, you have had a very interesting experience, and you have a equally interesting historical background, you know, as you have long had aristocracy system, you have had nobility in this land long before outsiders ever set foot here. Then, in school, I followed the history of the resulting conflict.
Sorry, the feedback is quite disturbing.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Do you want to change the microphone?
Yeah. Yeah. I hope that I can guarantee you, madam, it wasn't me, it's the equipment. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Although you have a nice big voice, but it wasn't.
Yes. Thank you for the compliment. The apartheid and all that, the inherent conflict and so on, you went through, and then the Madiba phenomena, we all watched. In all what transpired here, and so very interesting. And what I think in terms of our country, as our delegation leaders have explained, it's the way Nelson Mandela and the ANC leadership were, after winning the political power, the decision made to embrace different communities, including the minorities, and build a new South Africa. To me, that is a very valuable lesson for a country like ours, Indonesia, with it's a national platform or state philosophy that is based on unity and diversity, because we have so many different language groups, ethnic groups, different religions. Predominant is Islam. Some of us belong to other religion. It's quite challenging for us to, as my delegation leaders have alluded you to, keeping the country together, let alone the development challenges presented in a nation as diverse as ours. As mentioned, yes, we in the eastern part, particularly the two provinces in Papua, have had a somewhat strange kind of history. When Sukarno and Hatta declared independence for Indonesia on the 17th of August 1975, the Dutch colonial administration cunningly kept Papua out. We were not allowed to be part of the just declared independence in 1945. So our fathers, our grandfathers, still insisted. Some wanted, some actually went out of Papua to Jakarta to gain assistance so that Papua could be part of this new Republic of Indonesia. Others who remained in Papua through no fault of theirs, and this is what I keep telling my government today, no need to claim that these are dissidents, people who are against the government. No. The ones left back in Papua also worked hard. They made representation to the Dutch Queen. They made took actions in order to also free ourselves from the Dutch colonialism, and hence the idea of a separate nation of Papua was born at the time. But then the whole process went through the United Nations. And in the end, in 1969, we were declared by United Nations as an inseparable part. We became inseparable part of the Republic of Indonesia. Hence, the delegation here, including myself, representing the entire nation. The most important part now, my boss, Mr. Swastono, has already explained about the government policies. I don't need to repeat that. But I think politically speaking, the most important development that has taken place in Papua, given the background to which I have just informed you of, is the special autonomy law. We have a special law that governs Papua as an autonomous region within the broader Republic of Indonesia. To me as a Papuan, this is very important. We are ethnically slightly different from our brothers to the west. We have had a slightly different historical path, and for us to be given that special consideration by enacting a separate law to govern politics, government, and development in Papua is a welcome development. Of course, as Mr. Swastono has said, some of my Papuan compatriots disagree, and that some of them have gone abroad, like I and my family did in the 60s. Others are still holding out there in the United States, in neighboring Papua New Guinea, in Australia, Vanuatu, also in the Netherlands and Great Britain. They're still advocating independence outside the Republic of Indonesia. Having lived out of the country, having been part of the Papua New Guinea experience of becoming a nation state, I think the most significant part in responding to the Papuan aspiration is the special autonomy laws, which makes us a self-governing region within the broader nation state of Indonesia. We manage our local affairs
It's still being formulated. It cannot happen overnight. We have political governance structures in place. Papuans are being given preference over other ethnic groups to actually run the government in Papua. This is very important. So it is devolution of powers from center in Jakarta to the region to enable us to also manage our local affairs. I think this is very important. It is not, as I always remind the government, it is not yet complete. It is not yet perfect, but at least we have had some constitutional mechanism put in place through new legislation. We have policies drawn up to guide the development efforts in Papua. And as a Papuan leader, I very much welcome that, especially as a Papuan who has been exiled because of political differences. I take a very positive view of what is happening now in Papua. And I, with government permission, I visit regularly visit my compatriots who are still in living abroad to talk to them, to tell them what is the state of affairs in Papua today, in Indonesia today, how we can still achieve our aspirations to secure Papuan interests, in order to develop and also create prosperity for our people and so on by collaborating, by working together with the government in national government in Jakarta. So in that capacity, I am happy that I've been asked to join the coordinating ministry for political, judicial, and security affairs in Jakarta as advisor on the Papua autonomy task. I think that's all I want to say, and I'll be happy to.
Thank you very much.
Answer questions.
Thank you very much. Is there any other one from the delegation who wants to add? You are fine. The gray-haired honorable member who just came in now has come, he's the oldest here. He has come to check whether we're doing the right thing, to strengthen us better, and, you know, he drinks from and thinks from a great wealth of experience in life, and I want him to introduce himself.
Please.
Honorable Mpumblora.
Thank you. My name is Loiso Mpumblora. I'm pleased to see you. And I only hope that all what they have had, their ears are my ears. And what they have said is what I would have said. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Now, in your request for meeting with ourselves, you said that you want to understand the South African perspective of Indonesia on our bilateral relations and between also at the level of government to government, perhaps parliament to parliament and people to people, and the whole range of issues. Now, I don't want to latch deep into the past, to which you have spoken very well about our country. But we want to thank you for saying all of the good things that you've said about our country. We, like many countries in the continent, we have emerged from the cold winter of colonization,
yeah,
and later apartheid, and later we became a democratic country in 1994. The first democratically elected president was President Mandela.
Yeah.
This is the fifth parliament. We have a constitution that is arguably one of the most progressive and enlightened. I'm avoiding very deliberately the word best, because nothing is perfect, but it's one of the most enlightened constitutions in the world. And it has happened this way because our founding mothers and fathers were able to study the constitutions of different countries and see how they could fashion the best model that would reflect the aspirations of the South African people. And one of our strong points is that we are a non-racial and non-sexist democracy, and we are among the countries that champions the rights of women, because as you would remember historically, particularly in our country but also in the world, if you say you are non-racial, it's not sufficient. It is important also that you must be non-sexist, so that you bring into positions of responsibility and perhaps have an enabling environment for women to be advanced into parliament, into the municipal councils, etc., etc., etc. So that's one of our achievements in the country. But with regard to religion, before 1994, or let me say just after 1910, our constitution proclaimed that South Africa shall be a Christian country. But we are a secular state now. We don't discriminate against the Muslims, the Hindu, the African tradition, the Judaism, all different beliefs. And our constitution and our Bill of Rights expressly disapproves of a discrimination against any language or any culture or the sexual orientation of any sorts. We have 9 provinces, and the provinces are not necessarily the same, even in terms of poverty levels are not the same, but my colleagues are going to speak to that. And I think that we are a very strong democratic state or country. We come from the ANC, which is the ruling party since 1994. We have a very vibrant, very robust opposition, and the members of the official opposition are actually here. But we have 13 parties in parliament. All in all, that's just how far we have come. But later we'll then talk about how we see the relationship between our two countries. Before that, I just want to defer to my colleagues to say a few things, and then we can get into that. Honorable Khatebe, you want to have the first bite?
Thank you, Chairperson. Again, really, we say warm welcome to the Indonesian delegation. First of all, we know very well that our history of South Africa and that of Indonesia are intertwined. I recall during 1995, during the Bandung Conference, when the ANC was still banned inside the country, no, it was not yet banned by then, the ANC was still not in government. But the government of Indonesia invited the ANC to be part of the Conference of Bandung. It was represented by comrades Kotane and Kachalia. So it's very historic, because if you look from the site of the Bandung Conference, it was the precursor to the formation of the non-allied movement, whereby I think that conference, the outcome of that conference was very important. In particular, the principles which were adopted, that we have to respect the sovereignty of the sovereignty of all the states, small and big. That conference also brought together the Asian people and African people who are under the yoke of colonialism. But we know very well that colonialism will come in different forms. We're able to liberate ourselves from direct colonialism, just like yourself. You had your own share of Dutch colonialism and your own share of English colonialism. Also on our side, it was the same. Same. We also had Dutch domination. We also had English domination. But what was critical out of that is that out of the ashes of colonialism and apartheid past, we could not come out with anger. Instead, we must embrace all the nations, all the people who were together, because some of these people who were really, which the government was oppressing on their behalf, they were not part of that. Some of them didn't even know about that. When I interacted with some people from the white community, they didn't know that in the township people were placed according to the language in which they were speaking. So we find that one township where the people will stay, they know that this section is only for the Basutu people, the other one is for the Swazi people, Zulu people. So it was done to divide the nation, so that those guys who are in power could do that. But what was very important is that after the democratic breakthrough, what is bad which has happened to you, you cannot wish it for your own neighbor. So I think that was the philosophy of the African National Congress, that we have to embrace your neighbor so that you can build the country. I recall Utata Ulendu, Ugovin Mbeki, said that it is not because we are not angry that they went to jail for many years, but they don't have time to be angry so because they have to build a nation. I think that with this issue of Papua, which I'm still speaking about, it was the clear issue of dividing again the people of Indonesia. As said, that the Dutch made it deliberate that they removed them from the mainstream politics of Indonesia. I think that even with these forecast programs which are putting in, or government is putting in health, education and infrastructure, it will go a very long way in creating cohesion within those communities. I think that that one must be encouraged, because even ourselves, what we did is very true. We have a policy of black economic empowerment, because you know that under apartheid, the blacks were the lowest. So in order to have a proper social cohesion at the top, it's very critical that you bring all the people into the mainstream economy. So you have to have special programs. So you are not alone on that polar regard. I think it is working. And then why do we think that it is working? Because you find that at the end of the day, South Africa is one of the different, it's a different country altogether. You find that we went to the elections now, in the 3rd of August. ANC lost some municipalities in the elections. But there was no backlash, there was no fighting. When we see the members of the opposition, we take them as our brothers and sisters, because what is important that we are South Africans. That's the starting point. So also when you deal with this issue of Papua, I think that the approach which you are taking is the right one. But the thing which is going to eliminate all the schisms is to empower the people economically. Because if people have nothing to lose, they can do anything. So I think that's the crux of the matter, that empower the people economically. The starting point of doing that, provide them with proper education, provide them with health. Even ourselves here, the government has got six priorities. The first priority is, guess what? It is education. Because without education, you cannot empower a nation. When you educate someone, you empower him permanently. Because that's what we always say, that if people are not educated, they'll depend on a state forever. But you go to a family, even someone who's coming from an informal settlement, in that family, get someone who becomes an engineer, becomes self-sufficient. That person is going to lift that entire family out of the chains of poverty. So I think that the way you are taking it is correct.
is correct. I think that South Africa is going to work with you through, support you through, because we are also in the same space. South Africa is also not hunky dory. There are also big divisions in South Africa here. You go to the rural provinces, Mpumalanga, Limpopo, KZN, Free State, you find these high levels of poverty, of which we are still struggling. That's why I'm very happy that you are reaching out on the issue of investments, because we do need to reciprocate investments between these two countries, so that as we invest in each other's country, then we are able to create new job opportunities, create new skills for our people so that they can live. But I think that as you did in Bandung, you know very well that even during the 60th anniversary of the Bandung Conference, our deputy president was there,
yes,
representing us as a country, to show that we've got a very special relationship with Indonesia. You know, Chairperson, not President Mandela passed on, I was in Indonesia. So I wore a batik shirt on that day. Everyone at that hotel really appreciated that. Yeah, you must, from South Africa, from everyone was really sad that our icon has passed on. So it shows that we've got this strong historical relationship. Thank you, Chair.
Hello, Kalia.
Thank you. I don't think the work left anything for me to ask now. I was just fascinated to hear of the success of Papua as working independently, yet being under the Indonesian government. And what model is that based on? And, you know, you said that there are people who left because they couldn't see themselves living in such a situation, and you are talking to them. But has the country embarked on a kind of a repatriation program? In South Africa, we have what is called come back home. So, you know, encouraging graduates who have left, you know, to come back. So, you know, would you be able to shed any light on an initiative like that?
Thank you, Honorable Raputi.
Yes. Thank you very much for the information you shared with us. I was wondering if ever you have some women. parliamentarians. But anyhow, I see your shirts. You've got nice, beautiful shirts, just like Mandela and our whip hair. Yes, and as our whip have already alluded, about your dimensions, those physical dimensions that you are having, they are similar to ours, which ours, number one is education, number two is health, number three is socio-economic development. Number four is security. Number five is employment. So I think some way we share, because I think human rights plays an important role. So we really, as you're saying that you are here to have some more relationship with our with South Africa, and even our people also, he was in your country. And I'm just asking that, you know, I know Indonesia, it's have a lot of volcanic eruptions, and then how do you deal with it? And I think it's very important as on health and safety measures. You know, I think probably that is one thing that you can be able to share, as you see that now we are in this catastrophe of global warming,
we don't know what actually can happen, but I believe that probably you've got such an expertise on the issue of combating this whatever trauma and injuries because of the situations that you get there in Indonesia, that you are welcome. I think in those issues you can share the best practices. Yes, I thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kenny, followed by Mkhala.
Thank you, colleagues. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, colleagues, for the information we are getting from you, to share the same sentiment of my colleagues also. As you see that, we are women, therefore are gender sensitive. When you walked in there, we said, where are women? Where are our partners? Because that's why now she's raising that issue. On the same issue. Just want to check if, as you know that you are taking where your focus is, infrastructure, health, whatever, and economic empowerment, education, diplomacy, etc. But I just want to check the gender issue, if you ever discussed it, or maybe you said that you have got in Babwane, you have got special autonomy law to govern. Now, what I'm just going to check, if there is anything that pertains to women, looking at this economic empowerment, because if you were talking about economic empowerment, we're talking about economic empowerment for all. And now, that's why I want to check your status on gender sensitivity. Secondly, also on education. You know that we have got problems here now of late about education. As the African National Congress, in our Freedom Charter, we said doors of learning shall be opened. Now, you see that our children are no longer now, they want free education. And we don't know whether we are really ready about free education for all. But just to check, how is your education? Are you having that system of free education in the country? Or also you are just like ours, we are still struggling to get through this free education, which our children, because now all of them, they want their hunger about education, and also that is also our priority as South Africa, as we also have the same. On the issue of health, also in South Africa, we are looking at national health insurance so as to accommodate this one universal status of health, so that even the poor can get quality health services. Just want to check how far are you with the issue of health. As you say that also health is one of your focuses. And yes, I'm glad that you are talking about South Africa, that is your strategic partner. Also are concerned about the marine development. Really, I think we are really on the track, because now we've got a blue economy. So we think that we are going really to move along with you on that issue. I think my colleague Peggy has touched the issue of Kubera's Act. I'm going to omit it. And you know that also, as you know that South Africa, on human rights, South Africa is championing the peacekeeping. As you said, that also really that you value your value lesson of unity, and as South Africans who are championing. So really, that's what I think, that it's as partnership, we must also work together. As also that is also our focus, as in the unity and diversity, as my colleagues have just alluded on that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me also echo the sentiments of my colleagues and
welcome the Indonesian delegation. I just want to ask the question of the economy. As you know, the global economy at the moment is undergoing severe strain, and South Africa is no exception. And I've seen that you have grown by 5.7%, and this year's projection is 5.2. Our projection is 0.5. So you can see the difference in terms of that. How have you diversified your economy? You are a tourism and waterlogged country. How have you diversified your economy to reach the 5.7% economic growth? I think if it's for an island such as yours and a waterlogged area such as yours to have such a high economic growth that some of us are still envying, I think it's quite remarkable. What is it that you have done to reach this economic growth?
Thank you very much, Honorable Mukhalapa, Honorable Mpumlwana.
Sorry, I missed your presentation. Basically, I wanted on the human side. I assume that you do, if I'm not mistaken, have various communities in there. Probably speaking different languages. Historically, you had various communities. Now, how do you manage the question of a language? Here in South Africa, we have recognized all the languages, and they say they have got equal status. You are free to speak your language, and the government must make sure that your language is promoted. How far are you in that particular? Secondly, what's your relationship with your very, very close neighbor, Australia? I'm not saying you're fighting, but what's your relationship generally with Australia? You must be trading with it because it's nearer you, and then of course Malaysia, another one, and the other islands closer to it. The other thing is there is a feeling of I don't know who is threatening who. The question of peace, because basically I believe that even before we talk about trade, before we talk about food, because everything is politics of the stuff. So this thing is always wanting to, it doesn't end, it always wants to eat all the time, right through. And people go to war and fight, and when you look at it, it's about this, nothing else. I want to eat and you must not eat. How far are you in terms of making peace in the area, and do you have problems that need to peace be addressed? I'm saying so because generally there's war in various countries, and there are also people who put in bombs and so on, fighting over that. How far are you in making peace? And in this country, we pride ourselves by making peace anywhere in the world. We try and talk to various fighting people and make peace with them. How far are you, just to learn from you people, how far are you in that area in doing so? There are so many questions I asked. Sorry. Let me. Thank you very much, sir.
Any further takers, Honorable Bachmann?
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Sorry, I know your hand was not up,
yes.
But just digging you out.
That's true. Thanks for the opportunity. I've actually just been, I was being educated, as to speak. And just thank you very much for the presentation.
Thank you very much. I just want to ask you just a few questions, but I also think that I must just make, once again, a very broad comment on a few things. How you in the Republic of Indonesia are carrying out your oversight and accountability, your oversight and accountability to the executive, to make sure that the money that they are given is spent on the issues that it is spent on, besides perhaps, I don't know what your Auditor General is called, but from the side of the legislature, but also how do you always keep very narrow and coercive the distance between the lawmakers, the members of parliament, it doesn't matter whether they're in the province or in the National Assembly, and the ordinary people, how do you involve them in the lawmaking process, that they inform you and then you inform them back, because it's an important thing that in each of our nation states, we work with our people and we think with our people, so that they own up that this is our constitution, this is our law, this is our policy, and be supportive to their government. And the last one, as this committee, we are seized with the Foreign Service Bill, which came from the executive, and it is now here in Parliament. And we will be undertaking study tours to some countries that will won't be able to travel everywhere, to some countries, just to learn from them how they crafted their own legislation governing foreign service. And the question is, because each of our countries have many players in the foreign service. In the South African context, for instance, you obviously have people from defense, because we've got peacekeeping missions in the continent. Some of them are not actually peacekeeping, they are offensive missions. They are multinational. Now, we have players like trade attachés in the different countries, from the Department of Trade and Industry, the Department of Economic Development, the Department of International Relations has got ambassadors, etc., etc. Now, the legislation that is before us is to find a way of harmonizing how all of these players from South Africa can be, you know, can be, I don't want to say governed, but try to harmonize a way in which all of them can best represent the interests of South Africa without saying, now I'm from defense, I'm from home affairs, I'm from state security, I'm from that and that. We would want to hear something along this line from you. Now, just to say a few things on the strategic importance of South Africa as guided by either countries and as guided by its own history. Earlier on, Honorable Khadebe said that we belong to the non-aligned movement. You see, we have worked, even before we unbanned talking for the AIDS, we have worked with the countries of the West, the USA, countries in Europe, we have worked with countries from the East, Russia, China, Indonesia, India, etc., etc. And after 1994, all of this relationship with the countries of the West and the countries of the East and within the African continent actually stands us in very good stead on a number of areas. Whether you're talking economy or talking politics or talking diplomacy, etc., etc., we have many friends
in the United Nations. Of course, we have some enemies now, and sometimes even within the African continent, because there's competition among nations. But the point I'm getting into is that if you look at South Africa at the level of trade, we have a strong North-South trade relations with the USA, with Europe as a bloc, which is the EU. Well, Britain has just exited. It's called Brexit. We have a strong trade with the countries of the North, the North-South trade relations. But also, as a country of the South, we have strong South-South relations and cooperation at different levels for economic development and for science and technology and of course, political and relations. Largely, we see that there is an emergence of the South. The countries of the South have got strong emerging economies. And one of their strong points is that they've got large populations, very young populations, which is good for markets. So, well, it is both a downside and an advantage. When you look at it from the point of view of markets, it's actually an advantage. But the downside is that if people are not educated, they are unemployed, they become a burden to the state. We have worked our relationship with the money lenders of the West, the World Bank and the IMF have been like all other countries, that we think that some of their conditionalities are unfair to developing countries. But nonetheless, we have, as a country, we have worked with the IMF and the World Bank. We are very grateful that the countries that belong to BRICS, the five countries, have now come up with the establishment of the BRICS Bank based in Shanghai, and it will have a regional office or branch here in Johannesburg. This branch is for the Africa region, it's not for South Africa, specifically with a mandate to give loans on infrastructure. One of the weaknesses, one of the, not quite weaknesses, one of the painful things about the African continent is that infrastructure is still very backward in terms of airports, in terms of roads, in terms of electrification, bridges, connectivity. You know, the airports, for instance, there are countries in the continent where you have to fly from this country, go to Paris or to France, and come back to a country next door because there's no connection, or there's no road connecting, or there's no tunnel connecting, things like that. And so the BRICS Bank will assist that we deal with infrastructure to develop our country. But lastly, specifically with the Republic of Indonesia, bilateral relations on different funds, on science and technology, on trade. We are also strong on agriculture. We export meat of different sorts. We export wine. It's regarded as one of the best in the world. We would be very happy that this keep strengthened at the level of government to government. But even as parliament, earlier on I've spoken about that. Nothing would be wrong with these parliaments visiting each other to learn best practices. I want to defer to some of my colleagues just for one or two things and then so that we are able. Oh, before that, a question, because there are some questions that have been asked, and I hope you will take turns to answer those questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think what is also worrying me is the statement that there are people from Papua who are outside the country who want to secede, something like seceding from the country. I think that in South Africa, we also had those divisions when we started. I'll make an example. There was this province of KZN, where the people wanted an independent type of state. But what we did is that we had to go through a lengthy process. The lengthy process we went through was known as CODESA, Convention for Democratic South Africa. Now, in CODESA, we had all the parties, all those parties which were in power then, which were oppressing the people, those parties which were in the homelands, those political organizations who were not in government like the ANC, we came together in the World Trade Center in Joburg, where the people sat around the table and crafted the future for the country. So it means that it was the type of an open engagement. I think that type of engagement can also work on the side of Papua as they're dealing with this issue of secessionists who want to come into play. Because how can it be done? You can go straight, get those people who want even to leave, let them be part of the discussions and negotiations. Because that's what I liked with what President Mandela used to say, is that you don't make peace with your friend, you make peace with your enemy. So it means in order to make peace with anyone, you have to engage that person. There are certain concessions which have to be made. There are certain things where you have to climb down. Now, I think that if you request even from the side of the staff of parliament to give you documents around the model of CODESA, what transpired there, so that you can, because we had all these even right-wing groups, far-right groups, far-left groups, but at the end of the day, we came together as South Africans and ensured that we bring peaceful settlement after that. But because in the process of doing that, there was some sort of, we call it a low-intensity war, which was taking place during that time. ANC had its armed wing, Umkhonto we Sizwe, PAC had its armed wing, ABLA, AZAPO also had its arm winged. What was the arm wing? AZANLA. And INCATA has also had its own semi-lento arm wing. In the process of dealing with that, we appointed a process after 1994 election. President Mandela appointed a commission which was known as the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. That Truth and Reconciliation Commission was different from what happened in Germany. Remember in Germany, after the Nazi system, the Germans was very hard. They hunted all the Nazis all over the world, even up to this day. But in South Africa, we took a different approach, whereby we said that, yes, all the sides committed mistakes, so but let's sit down. When the people come to the table and confess that I have killed so and so because of political reasons, and then those are the things which were the bricks which made South Africa's transition from apartheid South Africa to the democratic South Africa we're in today. This was made out of those bricks. But as I said before, after that, the issue of economic empowerment of the people is at the center. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, just to add my voice to this, that at the Convention for a Democratic South Africa, now known as CODESA, different political parties that didn't like each other met there and had a discussion, at the end of which is the kind of constitution that you have in the country. There were four provinces that constituted apartheid South Africa from 1910. And even the history of those provinces is actually very interesting, political and cultural. We had a province called Free State and we had a province called Transvaal. There you had two former independent republics of the Afrikaners.
the Afghaners. Transvaal was independent from 1852 and the Free State 1854. The Cape Colony, this part where we are, which is now you have the Cape is divided into three, the Western Cape here, and the Northern Cape, and Eastern Cape. But this was called during British colonial times the Cape Colony, and Natal, which is now called KwaZulu-Natal. Even the landmarks, the names of streets and mountains and all, largely is actually reflecting the British history. Now, 1910, when the other convention for uniting South Africans, the United Four Provinces, you could see that the two were English, the other two were Afrikaners. Then they formed the Union of South Africa. In 1994, we formed nine provinces. Ne? Yeah. Now, that means because we are not a federation, but we have provinces that have some autonomy, we are kind of quasi-federal. The National Assembly is here, but each of our provinces they make their own laws, but that within. But one of the things that we did also to heal the wounds of the past, we didn't go for retribution. We didn't go for hunting people. And I can explain that we had a very good case to do so. We could have said the United Nations proclaimed that apartheid is a crime against humanity. And we could have gone to the ICC, we could have gone to the International Court of Justice and say that anyone and everyone who presided over that system, which was a crime against humanity, imprisoning Mandela, killing that and that and that, committed that crime, but would not have peace in the country. So our advice to different people and nations is that they should go the TRC way. We are saying the same thing to South Sudan. We're saying the same thing in the DRC and other countries where people are fighting. We are mediating in the between Israel and Palestine, but we always say let people talk. Let there be a now TRC meant the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, where people went to confess and indicate what happened, on whose instruction, etc., etc. Not for purposes of retribution, but to make closure with the past. Indeed, if we could advise, not necessarily as Parliament, but as the people of South Africa, is that if there are any secessionist wishes by certain provinces, including Papua, in Indonesia, in the same way as you have with Tibet in China, you should be guided by experience in human history. You know, we had an American Civil War because the North wanted to secede. You remember the American Civil War? Right here in Africa, we had the war in Nigeria, the Biafran War, 1967, because the North wanted to secede. Remember, the northern part of Nigeria is largely Muslim and the South is Christian. It didn't work. You had... So I can go on and go on and on. Now, China, for instance, on Tibet says there's one China policy and will go to war with any country that says they advise Tibet to secede. Now, if we could advise whatever tensions are there, whether they are political or cultural or people want to secede to be independent, etc., it's important to have an engagement and see whether there's any extent to which their languages, their culture, their political life can be accommodated within the broad scheme of things in a nation. Yeah, but now we will invite you to answer the questions and so that we can close the meeting. Yes, yes.
Mr. Chairperson, thank you very much. Let me answer, and then maybe I will request also the head of delegation, also a member, to answer some of the question if I'm not covered when I answer the question. First, I'm going to answer your regarding the accountability in Indonesia. The cooperation between the government and parliament. We have also accountability, especially during the every year. The president should have a speech in the parliament and for the accountability. And also, the parliament is always watching the work of the government. Luckily now, we have what we call it e-procurement. For any government, yes, e-procurement, all now e. So no, it's very difficult now the corruption. And then also, like in Indonesia now, we have very powerful corruption commission, and in Indonesia, and this corruption commission, they can tap all the telephones, or whether that one is coming from parliament or the government. That is really very very powerful. This is so. That's why not only in parliament itself, there's some going to the jail, but also the official coming from the government. This is really check and balance is really very very good in between government and parliament. And also the for the bills, foreign service bill, for instance, that's the idea is coming from the parliament. And then they discuss with the office of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. So based on that, there is input also from both sides to settle down the bills. That's only not only for all the ministries like that. It's coming from the parliament, the idea. Mm-hmm. And also, because the parliament also, they have export also. So that's why they produce what we call it regulation is coming from the parliament, and under the committee one is for the foreign affairs and also defense. So we have the how many committees? I forgot. 13 committees, because yeah, and as you know that Indonesia we have 34 provinces, and then. Luckily, also we have now direct election from the head of region and a mayor, provinces, and also the governor, president, all direct election. Yes, that's really we are using the democracy like that. Yeah, and this one and now the. Actually, between South Africa and Indonesia, we put a member of G20. From the African continent is South Africa, and then in Asia, Southeast Asia is Indonesia. This is really very good for us. We have a cooperation in that way. Even in UN, we have very close relation between Indonesia and South Africa. This is really good sign for bilateral relation, especially in politics. And also, thank you very much. You mentioned about the Bandung Conference in 1955. This is really at the beginning that we help all the colonial states. We encourage them to get independent. That's really very strong. Then the consistency of Indonesia helping South Africa is really, you can imagine, in our passport during that time, before 1994, not valid entering South Africa, Israel, and Taiwan, because one China policy. Yeah. So this really very consistency of Indonesia, and we support your to overcome the apartheid. Yeah. And then what else? The bilateral between South Africa and Indonesia in economic. Actually, we import a lot of beef, but the distance, the problem is the distance from
from South Africa to come to Indonesia is a little bit far, comparing our neighboring countries like New Zealand and Australia. And also there is a problem also. We cannot import livestock coming from South Africa because of the distance, really. Yeah. What we import from South Africa and New Zealand is livestock in order to give a chance for the our people in Indonesia to grow that beef to give a chance for the rural area. And then for the policy of beef, recently under the President Joko Widodo, we can import from the country if one province they got diseases of mouth and so we cannot import from that province, but we can choose other province that they are free from the diseases. That is really very very flexible. And then recently also we relax our policy. The fruits and vegetables, they can come from South Africa. We import a lot of fruits coming from South Africa. But for wine, there is a problem because the majority population of Indonesia is Muslim. So there is a special regulation for wine. It's not allowed to sell freely for that one because of the religions. That's really very difficult FY. Yeah. For Papua, maybe my colleague will add that one. And then also, I will start from the question number one. It's about the participation of women in parliament or in the government. You can see, so actually, I'm like unfortunately, we have no women delegation right now. But about how many percent?
30%.
30% is in parliament, and also we have a president, women president already in Indonesia. So yes, Mrs. Megawati, the daughter of President Sukarno. Yeah, yes. I think during that time she visited already to South Africa. This is really very 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 good. In the 10 years, maybe. And the most ambassador in our office is a women. I'm sure that one, because the young people, the women is really very dynamic and very active. So I'm sure that in 10 years ahead, the women will be occupying all the ambassadors level of that. For the human rights, we are very active in human rights, and recently also Indonesia would like to come to the as a candidate of the non-permanent member in UN Secretary. So we like to have support coming from South Africa in this matter, and then also we are really very active. And then you mentioned also natural disaster in Indonesia because we are living in the ring of fire. We realize that we are living in only in Kalimantan. That's really same land like Africa. This satellite very simple. But in all the islands, we are really realize that we are living on ring of fire. So our building is we preparing for that one. And then during the in Aceh we have also the experience for tsunami, and then thank you very much that we got also assistance coming from South Africa. You sent a big delegation during that time also. That's really really we very appreciate for that one. And education, that's really we concentrate in this education, especially in vocational school, sorry. Because we believe that vocational school is really very important for the country. That's our neighboring country is now preparing also vocational school. So that's why, yes. Now in ASEAN, ASEAN is the association, Southeast Association organization, consists of 10 countries. recently, in the end of last year, we opened our market as a single market. And based on that, of course, we have to prepare our human resources development. Otherwise, you know, in Indonesia, mostly we speak Indonesian is really very strong. So starting 10 years ago, we concentrated also some school that speak in English language. You know, based on the language, Indonesia is about 700 language and dialect, and about 400 is totally different languages. But luckily, Indonesia, we are using one national language, where we derive from the smallest tribe in Indonesia. So not from the majority, from the smallest. And then we declared that language before we got independence from the Dutch in our independence in 1945. And then we declared using the national language in 1928. So that's the background of the Indonesian language. And everywhere we can speak in one language. Even the textbook also in Indonesian language. This is really very unique with the use of the territory and also very big population, 252 million of Indonesia. Yes, number four in the world after United States. Yes. So we have more than you, maybe in the ethnic group. We have 1,000 ethnic group. So that's why the unity and diversity, this is really coming from Indonesia, that we derive from the kingdom Majapahit in Java in the 8th century. And then for the education, we have a scholarship from the government to the young people. They can go study abroad. That really we provide the scholarship for that one, for the one who are really good. And then for the national health. This one, how many years already? National Health for the PPJS. Starting
Previous government.
Yeah, previous government. 10 years already that we introduced National Health. This one is poor people can go to the hospital free, with a free charge for that one. And then for the marine, economic marine development, both Indonesia and South Africa, we have the same policy, what we call it blue economy. And then under IORA, Indian Ocean Rim Association. Right now, Indonesia is a chair, and then South Africa is a vice chair. And in 2018, South Africa will be a chair for the IORA. And the next year, for the first time, Indonesia is, will hold a summit meeting for IORA in Jakarta. Hopefully, the president of South Africa will come also. And then I propose also in that meeting to have a business meeting parallel in that meeting, because we need to accelerate our economic cooperation based on the business meeting. Hopefully, there is some businessmen to can meet each other, match meeting. So based on that, we can accelerate our economic relation. And then for the global economy, that's really very dangerous for us, and then influence all the countries in the world.
Global warming.
global this one, global economic downturn. This one.
Just a moment. Mukhalapa, we're talking about global economy or global warming. Wait, I want to go here.
Global economy.
Okay.
So, not only South Africa got the impact of the global economic downturn, but also Indonesia. But luckily, Indonesia can still maintain our economic growth because of the policy, consistency policy of economy from the government, and also how to attract investment. Now, we really compete with other countries to attract investment coming from outside. So we have to have a good policy to attract investment coming from the outside. But Indonesia not only invite investor coming from outside, but also we are ready to invest to other country. That is really, we encourage them also to come to other countries to invest. Like we have a noodle company in Nigeria, in Sudan, in Saudi Arabia, in Ethiopia, and also we have also agriculture palm tree in Liberia. So our company, Indonesian companies, we encourage them to invest also in other countries. That's really very, very good for us to help them. But the strong one, why Indonesia is we still maintain our growth, because domestic consumption very, very strong. Yes. And then also under the President Joko Widodo, we have a package of economy. That is really very consistent, this one, package. And then to reduce also the regulation who hampering the economic activities, especially in the regions, in the 34 provinces. We cut the regulation if the regulation hampering the economic activities. Yeah. With our relation with Australia, as we can say that one is in politics sometimes up and down, but in economic, of course, Australia export a lot of to Indonesia, and then we export also to Australia a significant quantity for that one. And then especially when we have ASEAN, the headquarter of ASEAN is in Indonesia. All ASEAN member, there is two ambassadors in Indonesia, one for bilateral, one for ASEAN, permanent representative and the ambassador level. Not only the member of ASEAN, but also the United States, they have two ambassadors. Australia, they have two ambassadors. South Korea, Japan, and Russia, they have two ambassadors in Indonesia. That is really, they consider that maybe Indonesia is really very important. And that the how to make a peace in our neighboring countries. You can see South China Sea is a problem of that area. Indonesia is non-claimant, but we always invite them to sit together, to talk together, how to cooperate between the claimant, and we have a project for that one in order to reduce the tension in the South China Sea, even through ASEAN or under Indonesia in itself. That is really very, Indonesia is very active in the peace development for that one, really. And then I think that one is from me, maybe my colleague will add something. Please, thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'd like to add some information regarding, especially regarding the Papua policies. If we are talking about the economic dimension, the our government has what we call it a comprehensive program for all the people in Papua provinces. The first one is boarding school for pre-education, for pre-university students. And then the second one is what we call it presidential scholarships for Papua. And then the third one is the affirmative scholarship from existing SIMS. This is the priority or the focus on the education dimension. A focus to the economic empowerment. We call it affirmative action to for economic. So that means the government provide from the Papuanese to be as a leader in economic. This is our goals. Even now we acknowledge that the economic practices
is not original from Papua, but we try to reduce the gap by using the affirmative action on economic. Even though we, okay, some problems, okay. But I would like to add, not only economic, not only for education, for the how to develop our human resources capacity and integrity, we have what we call it a special threat to our brothers in Papua. He wants to do whatever they want. For instance, the goals at our target in the 2030, we try to get the what's called 100 doctor level for the our brothers Papuanis, and then 260 masters level. This is our goals that we have to encourage to get the what we call it the best quality the our brothers population to manage themselves to be the real leaders in two provinces there. And then talking about the repatriations, for example, yeah. If I'm not mistaken, the Papua has a comeback home policy. Program or policy, if not mistaken. Yes, so we have the similar program to ask the our brothers now for exile to back to our home by, of course, by socialized, by using the our whatever we what we want. So, for instance, we try to communicate with other, and then we explain what is the program, what is the strategies of the government. Now, it's totally different when we compare to the past. And we hope our brother exiled back to because you know the Papua is of so many tribes. They can back to their own tribe. This is the government strategy to solve the problem. I think that's enough for the problem. But Franz, Mr. Franz can add some information, Baba.
Yeah. Thank you. I think there was a question on the governance model in Papua. Under the special autonomy law, we have 4-tier government, the national level. There are about 5 responsibilities, national responsibilities, including politics, international relations, education, treasury and taxation policies, defense and security, of course, is a national responsibility. Everything else is passed under the autonomy legislation is for us in the region to manage. So we have a provincial government, in this case, 2 provincial government, 2 provincial parliaments. We have another level, the regencies and municipalities. We also have parliaments at that level as well. And under the laws, the governors, both the governors and the 2 governors and 2 vice governors have to be indigenous Papuans. That's by law. So that is at least going a long way to recognizing our rights to manage our internal affairs. We have under the regency and the municipality, we have the district government, which is they are government appointed. We also have elected village government leaders. Now this is under, it is being changed now. The village government will be by appointment through the chief system, the customary system, the traditional chiefs who have authority over land and water and the sky will have to appoint. We have persuaded the central government to allow that, and law number 6/2014 does allow. So it's a very important thing. If previously Papuan visas and Papuan aspirations were being answered through presidential decrees under Sukarno and Suharto, now we are going through, and that's an important thing for us Papuans ourselves to understand. We are actually, the government is doing it constitutionally. There is constitutional mechanism. There are legislations being enacted, being formulated and enacted in order to guarantee us that our aspirations to at least manage our local affairs ourselves. That's very important. In Papua province, for instance, we have a 50-member at the provincial level, 50-member chamber, yeah, of parliament. They are representative of political parties. Depending on how you fare, you can get elected, whether you're Papuan or non-Papuan, you get elected, depending on the strength of your political support. But besides that, there is also a provision for the seven customary regions. We have seven customary regions, indigenous communities throughout Papua. We are guaranteed 14 seats in that parliament as well, on top of 56.
Oh, okay.
We may have Papuans as political party representative, but there is a special allowance made to enable greater Papuan participation in the management of our own affairs, hence the 14 special seat. The candidates must be indigenous, the natives, and they're nominated by the customary regions. That is in place. Now, that's not the end. Apart from the provincial parliament and the regency and the municipality assembly, we also have Papuan People's Assembly in order to safeguard or to oversee the Papuan interests. Papuan aspirations are formulated, taken through this legislative system, the governance system. We have MRP berapa orang ya? The Papua People's Assembly, Majelis Rakyat Papua, we call it. We have quite a sizable, and they are all indigenous. They must sit in the two provincial parliaments in order to also keep an eye on the government. You know, we mentioned about the accountability and oversight and so on. My friends, the issue of corruption, oversight and accountability, we Papuans are not immune from these things. So we also have a strong representation there to keep an eye on our own government. Now, we also have 13 members of in the national parliament in Jakarta. This is a sore area as far as I'm concerned. It's a sore area because political parties would like to control those 13 seats. We indigenous Papuans are saying to the government, no. In a 560 seat parliament, these 13 are meant for us. It should be occupied by Papuans because we want to be heard in the center of power as well. Why are the political parties being allowed to take some of these seats away from us? So out of the 13, we probably have only about five Papuans
members of parliament, and I think one used to be, or I'm not too sure, I haven't checked, used to be a woman. I'm happy to say it's a woman. The only Papuan member of President Joko Widodo's cabinet is a woman. I'm also pleased to report, and for us, 3 point something million in a nation of 252 million to have a Papuan in cabinet is a great consolation, and to even greater consolation, it is a woman. One of our sisters is representing us. She's in charge of women and child protection responsibilities in the whole of Indonesia. So in terms of women participation, to answer, refer to the questions on that, we also believe. And there are a lot of women, Papuan women, who are in the provincial parliaments as well as in the regency and the municipality level. Some of them are even serving. In West Papua, for instance, the deputy governor is a Papuan woman. So we do understand where you're coming from. And we're trying to do our bit also to address the gender issue, equality, and so on. In terms of development, as has been explained by Mr. Swastono, I think it is very important. The president and his cabinet plan, because there is two sources of funding. The national budget allocation, budgetary allocation for Papua provinces, but there is also the special autonomy funding, which is quite significant, and much of it I must report that are going astray. Let's put it that way, to put it mildly, are going astray. Most of our leaders who are now in the government, they are fairly new to taking responsibilities, and there are no guidelines provided in order to direct where the special autonomy fund, huge amounts of money going in. How much is this? US 40 something trillion rupiah. So that is in relation to the questions raised. Others, I think, have already been addressed. Unless there are specific matters, we'll be ready to answer. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Just before we give a vote of thanks, well, I'm happy at last you have responded to the issue of women, and you understood it as a gender issue, because when Honorable Kenya said, where are the women? I thought when he answered and no one was speaking to that, I thought you thought he was referring to your wives, and you know, no, and some would have said they are at home. Well, the I think it is very good. There are many good things that you have shared with us, but regarding the issue of language, in South Africa we have our own lingua franca for everybody, particularly males, tsotsitaal. Now that's the street language. It's not in the constitution. That's how we speak to ourselves, casually, of course. We want to request Honorable Mokgalapa to give a vote of thanks on behalf of all of us. Honorable Mokgalapa.
Thank you very much, Chair. On behalf of the Parliament of South Africa, and in particular this committee, we would like to thank you for taking time to share with us the successes of Indonesia. We can only grow from strength to strength once we have shared our best practice and learned from each other. And I hope that the bilateral commission gets to grow from strength to strength. I think one thing that came out very clear for us is that we definitely do share some form of common history in terms of integration, in terms of trying to live together. If we look at the example of the Papua people in Indonesia, and I think it's the same project that we have engaged upon. But most importantly, it's turning that adversity into success with how you have built your economy, which is quite very much important. Cutting red tape and ensuring that you attract investment, and cutting, you know, like we call it, you know, cutting the red tape and rolling the red carpet. I think that is what you've done. You've embraced the business, and you've embraced investment. And most importantly, you have also gone outside of your country to try and invest, which is quite very much important. So thank you very much for what you have shared with us. And I think we can only grow as a people and as a countries furthermore in terms of strengthening our bilateral relations. And thank you, and may you enjoy South Africa and Cape Town for whatever is left of it here, and also take some time to enjoy South Africa as well. And thank you very much for coming to Parliament.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mokgalapa, Ambassador.
Honorable Chair, on behalf of Indonesian delegation, I would like once again thank you very much. You spare your time. We know that you are really very busy in our parliament. And then of course, in this moment, we would like to get also your support for the maintaining, even from your side. I know that maintaining Indonesia as a unity a country. So if there is any any if you would like to get any information and inquiries about whatever, whether that one Papua or economic, our office is really open for these inquiries. And also, you know, why I mentioned that South Africa is the, we consider as a strategic partnership. I know that you have very good infrastructure, very good. And then to my colleague, when I travel from Pretoria to Durban, it's about 600 kilometers. I can drive only 5.5 hours. That's really a very, very good infrastructure. So it means, and then we consider also that South Africa as the hub of our Indonesian product to come to other countries, neighboring countries, and especially in sub-Sahara. That is really, so that's why South Africa is really very important for Indonesia. So I would like to invite you also to come to Indonesia, not only in business, but also actually we still learning how to be a country as a democracy. So that's why in every year we have what we call it Bali Democracy Forum, that we invite many countries in order to enrichment to enrich our democracy in Indonesia. We have a discussion every year for that one in Bali. In this coming December we will have another one, so Bali Democracy Forum. So that's really very important forum for us to discuss the future of the democracy, because we will see each other, which one is a weaker and which one is stronger, and then we enrich between each other and we learn each other. If you have any chance to come to Indonesia, please welcome. Once again, thank you very much.
Thank you, His Excellency the Ambassador. Just a few announcements. I want the committee secretary to announce where lunch will be served, and that he must conduct you to to that place where you are going to have lunch, and it's lunch with us. But I want to tender an apology for the chairperson. There is a meeting of the committee of chairpersons. Now the committee of chairpersons is presided over by the chairperson of all the committees of the both houses. This side is Honorable Frolic, this side is Honorable Nyambi, so we have that meeting to deal with business of Parliament. And the Auditor General is going to make a presentation, so I have to be there. So, but the rest of the members, except Honorable Mpumlwana, will you be able to have lunch?
No.
You have to attend to the matter you have written here. Okay. Yeah, Honorable Mpumlwana has written a note to me to indicate that he has got some engagement that he is going to attend to. But as the secretary conducts you to the place, I want us to deal with one housekeeping matter, which is it's a housekeeping matter. It's the election of the acting chair. I will explain after that. But I think we can do it alone. Yeah. Yeah, Babu Mpumlwana, if you can just wait for that item. Item only. Okay, thank you very much.
That's all.